Final hour of the Sports Junkies. Toby Altizer sitting in for the guys today. Max behind the controls joining me for the final hour for MassinSports.com. Bobby Blanco. Bobby, what's up, dude?
Yo, Toby, this is awesome. Thanks for having me, man.
I mean, how disappointed? Did you grow up a Junkies guy?
I was going to say, like, this is, one, thanks for having me. But this is, like, really cool, surreal for me because local kid, grew up in Silver Spring. I listen to Junkies every single day, driving down to Gonzaga. In high school, they're a part of the reason I got into this business. And so back in here in this studio is kind of like a very surreal, cool moment for me. So I really appreciate you having me.
Well, how disappointing is it that you get to hang out on the Sports Junkies and it's me?
Not at all. Not at all. No, because, I mean, you're still technically under the flag of the Sports Junkies, right? So, like, you're still promoting that show. So,
I'm sitting in Cakes' chair right now.
Yeah. I'm in Bish's. Bish is the only one I've never actually met in person. So
this is the closest you're going to get sitting in his chair.
Should I leave him a little note? Maybe
maybe leave him a note.
Bobby B was here.
This is Bobby Blanco.
Yeah. Go Eagles, boo Stags.
So we got to get into some Nationals talk. We'll start there because I want to get into some Commanders as well. You're a diehard DC sports fan. Also, maybe we'll get into relishing in the fact that the Canes are getting destroyed in the conference finals.
Please.
But I want to start with the Nationals. So we talked about this a little bit earlier. With the Juan Soto trade, how crazy is it looking back on that now, right? Like CJ and Gore and Wood. And one thing that I was telling Max earlier is that the line coming out of spring training that everybody was trying to tell me, whether it was a player, whether it was a coach, front office, PR, anybody, was that James Wood was going to be a superstar. And he's probably already there.
Narrator, he is.
Right? Like it's crazy to see that. And then Abrams has been one of the best offensive shortstops in baseball this year. Gore's leading the league in strikeouts. Like I think they had visions of these guys being good. I don't know that anyone could have thought that you'd get all these guys in one deal for Juan Soto.
Well, the vision was having them all play at the same time. Like, you would get that every once in a while at spring training. A Mackenzie Gore started, and maybe it was a day where James and Robert Hassel was in the field at the same time. But, like, the idea was to have all these guys at the major leagues in the regular season at the same time. And you got that Friday night. Like, Mackenzie on the bump, CJ at short, Robert and James in the outfield. Like, that four of the five prospects they got on the field at the same time in a major league game at Nats Park, like at home too, which is so cool. If you're a diehard Nats fan, like, that's what you've been waiting for since, what, August 22. So it was very exciting. I mean, like, I don't think Robert... I don't think a lot of people expected Robert to be up here this quickly. I actually kind of predicted he would be, only based on injuries happen. Like, they're going to need an extra outfielder at some point. And sure enough, that's what happened. But, just having him up here, and I don't think he's going to stick around for long, assuming Dylan gets healthy.
What do we think the timeline is on that, by the way?
Dude, there's no way to know. Obliques are so...
Exactly. It's an oblique. Yeah. I think everyone just assumes, 10 days, he'll be back. It's like,
Now... Dylan didn't sound too concerned, but the Nationals did, if that makes sense. Because, like, they already had the wheels in motion to bring Robert up by the end of that game. Like, they already knew, hey, we need to get somebody up here because this isn't looking good.
Well, and so here's where I thought it was interesting. They were essentially playing an outfielder down because of JY as well.
Right, yeah, and they would not admit, they tried to give him time, and then they couldn't anymore, so they had to throw him on the IL and backdate it 3 days.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting. So I think it kind of worked that maybe they were bringing him up for Young, and then in turn it ended up being Cruz, and then the next day it's Dalen Lyle for Jacob Young.
Yeah, so it all worked out, essentially. But, like, you know, I wrote this on MassinSports.com this morning. It's like, you know, this is how they've kind of planned. You don't plan for injuries. You never want injuries, right? But, like, think of since they started this rebuild process, all the prospects they've acquired via trade, everyone they've drafted, one up the middle, two athletic. Like, they are just going all in on, we're getting the best athletes on the field. They're going to be good baseball players, but better athletes, and we're going to build that way. And that's what you saw, and that's what Robert brings to the outfield. That's what Dalen brings. You saw the catches they made over the weekend. Yeah. Just crazy athleticism, speed on the base paths, quick bats, too. Like, I mean... Dalen's only played 18 games at AAA before coming up. Roberts doesn't have a full year at AAA yet. So, like, yeah, they're going to take some time to adjust to the majors. They're not supposed to be here just yet, right? They're only here because of injury. So once they adjust and make those adjustments and get up here, I mean, they could be impact players. Not like James Wood, CJ Abrams superstar level.
Exactly.
But you still need those role player guys like a JY, like an Alex Call, who contribute in the middle of the order, bottom of the whatever it may be, and still play really good defense and run a really good base.
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing is when Dylan Crews comes back, when JY comes back, what do you think ultimately happens? You think it's just send both those guys back down, or, you know, JY hasn't exactly been great at the plate this year. If one of those dudes is, say, hitting 260 by the time, because who knows how long this runway is, by the way.
Right.
You would think that maybe JY with a couple of extra days is fine with the shoulder injury. He seems fine walking around the clubhouse, but those things can linger. And then, like we said with Dylan Crews, you don't know what the timeline is. It's oblique. It's a twisting muscle in a game that requires a lot of twisting at aggressive rates. So I'm interested to see how they do. I don't kind of decide it too, but if one of these guys is playing well, do you keep one of them up and send down a call or send down a JY?
Yeah, I think Dylan, when Dylan's ready, he's back.
Yes.
There's no everyone arguing that he should be sent down. Enough with that. They're not going to do it. It has to get way more
worse. Well, I think they're discounting, too, how important he is to that clubhouse now. And he provides winning without the bat. And he's already shown, too, to me. Like, if you look at the 15-game sample size, because he played, what, like 45 games?
Yeah.
First 15?
Yeah.
Bad.
Right.
Middle 15?
But he's always started
good.
Bad.
Yeah, well, in middle 15, he figured it out.
Yeah.
And then back to struggling. Like, he showed you he can already figure it out. Like,
sure.
In between. So, like, I'm not worried about
it. I don't either. But the point is, his job isn't up for grabs. Like, once he's back, he's back. It is JY. Maybe to a lesser extent, Alex Call, because I think they do value Alex's ability to get on base, play good defense. I know he made a couple of mistakes yesterday, but typically he's pretty good out there. So the only thing I can think of, and I lean more towards Robert in this situation, because I think Robert's bat is a little more advanced than Dalen. Well, I should say a lot more probably than even though Dalen has been crushing it in his short time at Rochester. But I think Robert just has a better upside at the plate. So if somehow... Not somehow. If he does get it going and is performing well and starts to hit the ball, you know, JY has struggled this year at the plate. And I know he is gold glove caliber at center field, maybe the best defender they have overall on that roster. But you don't miss a lot when Robert's playing center field either.
Or Crews.
And Dylan can play center and we can shift Robert to right. So the only scenario I see is one, obviously the X factor is how long these injuries take to heal and then get back. I mean, you know, the longer they're down to, like, the more likely they're going to have to do like a rehab assignment. So that adds another like week or two. And then once they're ready, you know, that gives Robert and Dalen time to figure it out, make some adjustments, you know, and play ball. And if they play well, I think it is a serious conversation because, you know, this is not a shot against Jacob Young, but Robert Hassel III is a little more important to this team's future than Jacob Young is at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of got something out of JY that they probably weren't expecting.
Absolutely.
Like, this guy was never even in their top 30 prospects, according to MLB Pipeline.
I think he, like, cracked it, like, was number 30 right before he got promoted to the majors, and then he graduated.
Yeah, and you know, there's nothing against JY, because he plays so good defensively, and he's a good base runner, but his bat is never going to be on the caliber of, or at least potential-wise, of a Robert Hassel, or even a Dalen Lyle.
And that's fine. That's
exactly
that's okay.
Right.
That's okay. Again, not a shot at JY at all. It is more of a, you know, compliment towards Robert that he has such high upside at the plate while also not missing a step, either defensively, stealing bases, arm strength, stuff like that. So, yeah, I think that Robert is the one that could kind of force the issue if he plays well by the time Jacob is healthy and, again, can maybe make that conversation a little more difficult for the Nationals, which, by the way, is a good problem to have.
Absolutely. It's something I'm intrigued by because you look at the outfield and really that's the position that they're just fine if there's injuries.
Sure.
They have enough,
so much depth.
They have so much depth there. The question then becomes when you look at the future of the outfield, James Wood and Dylan Crews are locked in. There's no question about that. And then you're looking at JY, the guys we're already talking about, and where does Call fit in the long-term future? I don't know if he does. But then you're looking at young guys with JY and with Hassel and with Lyle, and you're running into too many outfielders. And so you run into a spot where if you're not going to spend money to improve the baseball team, the next best thing is then trading some of your assets.
Sure.
Because I think they're getting to that point now where we've seen just up the road, you work, you know, some in Baltimore with the Orioles as well, and seeing the way that their prospects have been run, where they have a lot of guys graduating at the same time, and you have guys shuttling back from Norfolk to Baltimore to Norfolk to Baltimore, and it feels like you've stunted a Kobe Mayo. Yeah. Like, you've seen what now Kyle Stowers is, where he never really got a chance in Baltimore. He's now crushing the baseball in Miami. You don't want to run into a situation like that here with the Nationals. So it's either they're going to help out your big league club, or they're maybe going to help out someone else's. Who do you think is, like, the long-term plan? Like, we know Wood and Cruz. You think Hassel is probably ahead of a JY? And, like, I don't know that JY has a big-time trade value.
No, I don't think so either. And I think Robert does. That's the problem. Like, as much as I would like to say Robert could be here for the long term, and you have that core of, you know, Mackenzie, CJ, Robert, James, Dylan for a long time, Robert probably has the most trade value of all of them, because you're not trading a James, you're not trading Dylan.
So you think he has more than a Lyle?
Yeah. I think he just comes with more prestige.
Sure.
A little more.
Because I think I'm a little higher on Lyle.
I think that, but I would say that's not the national perception, though. I don't think, unless you're super plugged into baseball and prospects, I don't know if a lot of people would be more high on Lyle than, like, if I'm another opposing team looking in, I see, oh, that's Robert Hassel III.
Sure.
Like,
there's no question the pedigree is much better.
Yeah, I think that's what is going to put him over top. Now, you and I follow the minor leagues from the Nationals a lot more closely than other people, so you might say, well, I see a little more potential in Dalen than Robert. I think it's one of those things where I think Robert's ceiling is higher, but Dalen's floor is higher.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Sure.
Between the two of them. So it kind of just depends what, if you're looking to trade or acquire one of those guys in a trade, what do you value? Do you value more of a sure thing in Dalen, or do you value higher upside in Robert?
So another guy, AAA, that I would love to see make his debut here soon is Brady House.
Yeah.
What do we think happens there?
Like, I love your emojis of call house up.
I did the same thing with Wood last year. This one's pretty easy. Just switch out the Wood with the house.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would love to see him at the bigs pretty soon. He's been so good at AAA. He's now been there for a little bit, and he's having success. He's improved over what he did last year in AAA. What do you think the timeline is? Like, to me, if we're getting past the All-Star break, I'm going to get a little bit frustrated. To me, it feels like he could be, honestly, what are they, home next Tuesday against the Cubs?
Yes.
I would love to see him playing third base in that game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something similar to what we saw with James last year. I mean, like, here's the thing. Mike Rizzo loves to wait on prospects. He is not going to promote a guy unless he feels absolutely ready, for sure, that he's ready, and two, that he's going to stick here. Like, his whole thing is, once you're up, you're up. Like,
yeah.
you are,
and I love that, by the way.
Yeah, I think it's, and we saw it with James. Like, that was the right call. You can even maybe argue maybe they rushed Dylan a little bit, but he started to figure it out. You know, we just talked about that. So, but, you know, James, I know he had a, I think it was a hammy last year issue early on, but he was waited until July. So I think that's kind of the timeline for Brady. I think you would want to see some maybe better underlying numbers on, I mean, the power's there. Maybe it's a little bit of a better on base, maybe more average, but you know, you're not bringing.
Well, you can nitpick too, because remember last year.
You can nitpick
year,
everybody.
Yeah, the last year, the thing when James Wood was, he's got to hit lefties, and he's.
He's crushing lefties.
Fine.
Yeah.
Against lefties.
Going the splits, oppo on lefties. It's, yeah, like ridiculous.
The splits are almost identical. And look, again, you want to temper expectations, because James Wood is like here, and everyone else is like a notch below that when we're talking about a Cruz or even a Brady House here. But, like, at some point, you've got to call him up and just see and how he does. And I think he's getting close to that point now where you can give him a long runway at the big league level, because he's shown he can handle AAA, and it's just that next step in the progression.
And this is, I think, why they decided to not go after an Alex Bregman or whoever in free agency this past year, because they were kind of counting on Brady to come up at some point this year. They weren't going to block him, you know, for a stopgap player, and that's why you have a mixture of Jose Tena, Amed Rosario playing third right now, and both guys combining for two home runs. Tena has zero of those, by the way. So it's like, you're getting no power from that third base side. Brady brings that. I would imagine you're looking at a July, early July, right before the All-Star break, maybe. I agree, after the All-Star break, that might be a little tough to sell.
Yeah, I mean, if things stay the same right now, you're not getting enough out of third base. You're not getting enough out of DH.
No.
Unless
James is the DH.
Correct. And I don't necessarily love that. I still want him to be able to develop.
I'm okay if he's getting off his feet.
Yeah,
a little bit.
From time to time.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't want it to become 2 and 3 days a week. He's DHing. I don't love that. Josh Bell has been interesting, because he's really, really struggled this year.
Yeah.
And you wonder what the leash is for him as the DH, because you need to get something out of that, and you just haven't. But the question then becomes, like, if you move off Josh Bell, who's your backup first baseman? And you can say Riley Adams has played a little bit over there, but I don't want my backup catcher being my backup first baseman as well.
I don't know if Riley's even played in a major league game at first. I think only at AAA.
So he's worked on it some, but like...
And that was a couple years ago at this point.
And that's where I think you run into the problem right now is it's not like there's a guy in AAA, aside from Yo-Yo, which I don't think...
He just got the AAA.
Yeah, they wouldn't view him
as
ready.
He literally just
yet.
Got there.
So what do you do there? Because I think for a lot of Nationals fans in their mind, it's as simple as... All right, move on from Bell and call up House, but then who's your backup first baseman?
But so you're saying bring up House to be the DH?
No, I mean, he would play third and then Tana would go to the bench, but there's no backup first baseman in that sense.
Yeah.
I think it's where you run into a lot of problems.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know if Rosario could play there. He's played all over the infield in his career. I don't know if he's ever made an appearance.
But I don't want to run into the same problem that you just did with Nassim playing center field when he's never right. done it before, right?
Right. I mean, again, kind of tying back to the earlier part of the conversation, they love versatility, but to an extent, it makes sense, right? Like, you can't just have anyone playing over there at first. What's that quote from Moneyball? It's like, tell them how easy it is. It's incredibly hard. Like, it's not easy.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have a backup first baseman outside of Josh Bell on the roster right now, and bringing up Brady House, while that hopefully solves third, does create more of a problem over at first. But, that's why I'm like, not to... completely derail this conversation, but look ahead. I'm looking at an Ethan Holliday for the draft, a guy who brings power back, can play first base, because they have no one outside of Yo-Yo, who's also a natural third baseman, on the farm system who, you know, you look at as like, that's our first baseman of the future. So they don't have no one. And Ethan Holliday could be that guy pretty quickly because he is built like his dad and can hit the ball out of the yard.
Yeah, I would love to fast forward so I know who they're going to take.
Yeah. Let's just get to July, whatever it is, right before the All-Star break. Let's just get it over with. Know who they're drafting, number one overall. By the way, Matt Adams should have gone to the lottery for the Wizards. Just saying. Can't believe they're picking sixth.
It's so annoying. And to look at Ahmed Rosario, at least in the big leagues, he has not played first base.
And I don't think Riley has either. No.
He's played second, third, short.
Riley made one appearance at first in 2022.
So maybe is your answer then to call
played
up
a full game.
Could you call up a third catcher if you wanted to call up House?
Who's a third catcher anymore?
It could have been Kisner, but now he's out
of
the organization.
Caleb Lovita's not ready. He's only at high A.
I guess you could call up Drew Millis, but you want him to get ABs. So it's an interesting spot where they've put themselves in a weird spot because they don't have corner infielders, at least on the first base side. They've got a bunch of guys that can play third, but you don't really have a guy that can fill in behind first base. I don't want to spend too much time on that.
Yeah.
I want to get onto starting pitching.
Sure.
Mackenzie Gore has been spectacular this season. I was talking to him about his start in Baltimore, which was one of the funniest lines I've ever seen. 3 2/3, striking out 9, 12 base runners, 10 hits, 2 walks.
Yeah.
Only the 2 runs, though. But he seems like he's taken a next step this year.
That is, while one of the craziest lines I've ever seen, also a pretty good showing of how much he's grown up this year.
Yes.
Like, that's a start. If that even happens, like, during his good points of last year or years prior, that gets off the rails quickly. And that is looking at a 5-6 run outing. He doesn't get deep into the game. The bullpen's taxed. They're just lighting him up. You've got to give him a lot of credit for giving up that many base runners in a short amount of time, but also only giving up those 2 runs and keeping them in the game. And that is why they were in position later in that game for James Wood to go hit that game-tying home run and then eventually win the game. So kudos to McKenzie. He's been great. I mean, the 93 strikeouts.
It's insane.
He's on pace for like over 250-plus. I think Scooball led the league last year with only like 230. Like, pitchers like don't strike out 250-plus anymore, like we used to see with Max Scherzer on a yearly basis. So, like, if McKenzie can get to that, I mean, that's just going to be nuts to watch. And he's getting deeper in the game. He pitched into the 7th Friday night again against the Giants.
And he probably would have finished it if he didn't take that comeback early.
Right, and that tightened up on him. So, you know, I like being safe at that point. You were still in the game. He had only given up I hate that he gave up a run because it was scored after he left.
He takes the loss in that game, by the way, which is just crazy to think about.
So McKenzie's been fantastic this year. Jake has been fantastic. He was just absolutely nails on Saturday.
What do you make of his velo being down?
He's always been that way. Like, go back. Like, he's never really been a high velo guy.
But he's, you know, he's throwing fastballs under 90 miles an hour pretty regularly. Not like he's always
sitting under 90?
I mean, he's not.
It's like low 90s.
He's not sitting there. But there were a couple times in his last start, you're watching it, and you're seeing an 89.4, an 89.8. It's not saying he's averaging that.
Sure.
He's still averaging probably 92 or whatever. But, you know, it's a little bit alarming when you see a guy under there.
Yeah. And that's definitely lower than you would hope.
But I saw Mark write about this saying, like, he's still dominating at times.
Yeah.
He's looking great. Like, I don't know what to make of it.
I mean, I don't care how fast he throws if he's placing it perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, and no one's, you know, hitting it and he's getting weak contact off it. No one's teeing off on him. I mean, I think at one point he was leading the majors in home runs allowed. I think that's kind of, he's reeled that in a little bit. But, I mean, that's the beauty. I mean, there's a lot of great things about Jake Irvin. Don't get me wrong. Very handsome man. Loves hockey, loves fishing, and all the great things about Jake Irvin. Great smile.
One of the best dudes on the team.
One of the best dudes. Great quote. But, you know, I think his, like, you can count on him basically at this point in the season, too, getting, like, six strong innings every single time. He has that club in his bag, though, where he can go 8 shutout. Like, we saw it last year on the 4th of July against the Mets.
My favorite game from last year.
Oh, it was the best. The screaming off the mound is like in the red, white, and blue caps and everything.
Yes.
Like, that is just a picture
Derek
perfect.
Law coming out with the American flag.
Yep. And then Jesse Winker with the home run in the 8th. Mm-hmm. Like, what a great game that was. And then he kind of repeated that on Saturday against another really good team in the Giants. And, like, that's the. He has that club in his bag. Sure, you're going to have a couple of bad outings mixed in here and there. Everyone does. But, you know, I love the thing about Jake. He's a bulldog. He's going to grind you down. You can pretty much count on like 5 to 6, possibly 7 strong innings every single time and give you a chance to win. And, yeah, he's a great, great. We used to think of him as like a back end of the rotation guy. He's developed into like a number 3, number 2 guy.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think they have right now in abundance, really. DJ Hur is now hurt, but
right.
Mitchell Parker, I think, fits in this maybe on the bottom end. But they have guys that are in that 3 to 5 bin, in my mind, where they can slot in anywhere. And all of them have shown flashes where they can pitch like a 2.
Yeah.
There are stretches where they pitch like a 5. But there are stretches, too, where over a 3 start, they look dominant. And I think Jake Irvin now has shown over a couple of years now that he has that potential to be up there. And consistency-wise, he's probably going to slot in, like you said, in that 3-4 range. But at any point for a 2 or 3 start stretch, or maybe even a little bit longer, he can pitch like a number 2.
That's also assuming, like, you know, the Nats go add like a frontline starter to be the number 1 guy. You bump McKenzie to your number 2 guy, and then Jake is like now you're 3 or 4. And then, you know, who knows what Cade Cavalli turns into. Maybe he has that potential or had that potential to be like a number 2, number 3 guy. Maybe he bumps Irv, but we'll see what happens there. But yeah, like you said, like we saw complete dominance from DJ Hurst last year against the Marlins. We saw Mitchell Parker go earn his first win against the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, these are guys that, like you said, they have that ability to go out and pitch like a number 1 on any given day. Sure, they're not quite putting it all together every single outing, every 5 days. They're young and they're not supposed to. Like, it's going to happen, but they all have, and they all pitch in different ways, right, too, which is a fun thing.
So much fun.
It's not like you're seeing, like, back in the day, like, you know, you would get Scherzer, Strasburg, you know, going back even a little further, like Zimmerman, Pfister, and all of those guys, maybe with the exception of Zim, kind of threw the same. Like, you know, you knew you were just getting high heat. You know, Max would be the slider and Strasburg would be the curveball and changeup. But, like, you knew, like, they were going to try to overpower you. These 5 guys, 5+, all pitch in different ways. So on any given day, like, opposing batters have to make different adjustments to these guys. And it's probably hard to game plan for, I would imagine.
That's Bobby Blanco. I'm Toby Altizer sitting in for the Junks. We'll get into the bullpen next, and then we'll get into some Commanders. Maybe we could skip the bullpen because I don't want it to be depressing.
Hey, Cole Henry.
Cole Henry looks good,
so we'll focus on the good.
We'll talk about the bullpen next. You're listening to the Junks. Welcome back. It is the Sports Junkies on Memorial Day. Toby Altizer sitting in for the guys. Joining me in studio from AssetSports.com is Bobby Blanco. So we were talking about the bullpen briefly. It's depressing whenever we talk about the Nats bullpen, but some of these young guys are getting more opportunities now, Bobby, and it feels like they're kind of stepping into roles, getting more comfortable, and showing that they have some real potential back there.
Yeah, I really like what you see from Cole Henry. Obviously, 16 appearances, 15 of them scoreless. Another one yesterday.
Which is crazy, by the way.
Crazy. Him and Jackson are going to be, I think, pretty good stories by the end of this year. You can even add Brad Lord a little bit to that conversation, but he's been going back and forth between starting and the pen. But two guys, Jackson, a first round pick, Henry, a second rounder. You need to get something out of those guys. I mean, we talk a lot about how the Nats have had a long history of bad drafting. So the fact that they're getting something at the major league level from these guys, both of them sport an ERA under 3 right now. Both of them have made appearances, 16 appearances, 18 plus innings for each. So, that's not nothing, right? That's a decent sample size for Henry's first taste of the majors and Jackson's first taste of the majors as a reliever. So, yes, the bullpen overall has been kind of a show. Looking at the regular guys, Kyle Finnegan is the only one with a WAR over 0, a positive WAR. but then, Jackson and Cole Henry have positive WARs. Brad Lohr does too. I mean, he's has a couple starts then there that's been helping him too. So I think that's a good. Who was the last homegrown Nats relievers? I know you often don't home grow relievers and you kind of acquire them as they develop, but
I'm trying to think. I don't.
There wasn't.
It's been a while.
Homegrown too, because that was their formula for so long. Obviously, starting pitching, good offense, and then acquire relievers at the deadline as you go, right? If Jackson and Cole can be homegrown relievers that they kind of make into these new bull, you could add Jose A. Ferrer too, because he's homegrown
as well. Yeah.
That's kind of cool and exciting because that eliminates the need. I mean, obviously, everyone always needs relievers, closers, whatever, but that eliminates that kind of a huge question mark going forward because it's always been a question mark for
them. And I think with Rutledge, probably a little bit disappointing that he wasn't able to make it as a starter, first round pick, sure. But if he can still help out the ball club and the bullpen, you're great with that. And Cole Henry, to him, it's just nice to see him back out on the hill, right? With the injuries that he had, for those that aren't familiar, had the thoracic outlet like Steven Strasburg, and he's had to go with injury after injury after injury dealing with these things, and for him just to get back out on the hill is nice. And so, I think the big thing for him is just keeping him healthy for a full year.
There was literally a time where he thought he wouldn't pitch again. And the fact that, he's now throwing the ball well, not throwing the ball period on a mound, then add it in the major leagues, then add the success rate he's having.
Very
it's
successful.
A great story for him personally and for the team. Right. So getting draft picks that can result into productive major leaguers, I don't care what they do. You could be a James Wood, you could be, the last guy on the 26 man roster, but you've got to produce at the major league level if you're a draft picker of this team because they have not been able to do that very often over the past 15-ish years.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's been the one knock. We were talking about the Juan Soto trade earlier. The knock
trades,
then,
they knock out of the park.
Exactly. The knock on Rizzo has been draft and development, right? And part of that is that stretch from 12 to 19 where they're trading away a lot of assets to continue to bolster their run. And then some of that, too, is, frankly, they just weren't hitting or they weren't developing. I mean, as much as we're talking about the good, there's still an Elijah Green down there, right? there's still some of those things. So I think that the ball club is going in the right direction. There's still some improvement to be done. Want to shift over to the gridiron. You're a diehard DC sports fan. What'd you make of the Commanders' offseason?
I kind of love it, right? Would you describe it? I mean, I think it's been successful. Adding Laremy Tunsil, adding Deebo Samuel, some of the other small pieces they did in either trades or free agency. The draft class, while small, I think are all hits or could be all hits, right? If you were to say... Look, I think for us as a Commanders fan base or people who cover the team, just, I hate this term, but want to call it Commanders Nation. I think that was the best season in my lifetime. I'm 33 years old. That was the best season I've ever seen in my life. So we're all on this crazy high, right?
Yes.
And so everyone has so many different avenues of how they want to improve the team. All right, we got to improve the offensive line. No, we need to improve the defense. Jaden can take care of the offense. Well, we got to add more weapons, yada, yada, yada. I think they've done a really good job, shout out Adam Peters, of threading kind of all those needles and adding a little bit here and there. Sure, they need more of a pass rush, but they've pretty much done everything that I think we as a fan base or media people could have asked for.
Yeah, to be fair, I think just about everybody whatever your biggest need was, they did something to address it.
Yeah.
They might not have done as much as you wanted, but they did something.
Yeah.
And so credit to them. What was your favorite move? To me, it was Laremy Tunsil. I think up until that point, because I really like what they did with the draft, I think Amos is going to be a really, really good player. Getting him in the second round, I think, is great value. I think once you step back and see what they did with Connerly, I think it makes a lot of sense. I think he fits. But up until that point of the offseason, I didn't necessarily love what they were doing. But when they traded for Laremy Tunsil, that kind of put me over the top of, okay, this guy, Adam Peters, is thinking ahead. He understands what's truly important. And then that, to me, signaled, okay, they're for real.
Can I say Connerly then? Because just to piggyback off that, because that was my favorite, honestly. And kind of the same thought process as Adam Peters is thinking ahead. I love, like, draft night, you know, we're seeing everyone fly off the board, and we're seeing a lot of those DNs that people were talking about going to be available. I'm like, okay, it's got to be a DN, right? Like, and they go tackle, and you're thinking, that's interesting. And the more you think about it, kind of dig deep into Josh Connerly's time at Oregon, the prospect he was, people saying that if he would have stayed at school for one more year, he would have been a top three pick next year. Like, that's Adam Peters thinking ahead, being like, Jaden Daniels is by far the most important aspect we have. Protect him at all costs.
Yes.
Get a guy who you have Tunsil on the left side, add him to the right side. You can bump somebody else in that guard.
Yeah, because I think Coleman now becomes a really good plus guard.
Right. And then whether, you know, Tunsil moves on, whatever it is, now you have your left tackle for the future already in-house, and he's just going to develop at, to use a baseball term, the major league level.
Yeah.
So that was my sneaky favorite pick of the offseason, because it kind of came out of left field. Again, more baseball talk. but, you know, it was like, oh, dang. Like, that is an awesome pick. Like, well, I'm all about it.
And the thing that I like about it is it's not one of those Ron picks that comes out Ron drafts Jamin Davis and you're like,
sure.
And you have to talk yourself into it.
So much talking ourselves into Jamin Davis.
Like Emmanuel Forbes. You're like,
so much talking into
Christian Gonzalez is right there. Yes. Emmanuel Forbes. And then you talk yourself into it. You don't have to talk yourself into Josh Connerly.
He's skinny. That's cool.
He's fast.
Yeah, that's also cool.
The first time you see that guy in person, you're like, well, I don't know if he should play football.
I don't know if that guy can play.
And by the way, it was like crazy because, you know, seeing Emmanuel Forbes in person and the way he was talked about, and then seeing people talk about Jaden Daniels, is like, those two dudes are not even close to similar.
No, they should not be playing the same sport.
Like, Jaden Daniels makes Emmanuel Forbes look like a twig.
Yeah. I mean, Emmanuel Forbes makes Emmanuel Forbes look like a twig.
Yeah,
but
it's just crazy to see the difference in those guys. But yeah, I mean, when you have the quarterback, which this team hasn't had in my lifetime, in your lifetime, and you do something to protect that guy, it just shows that you're understanding of what you have.
Yeah. I mean, like, and Adam Peters has seen this, right? I mean, that's essentially what the 49ers are doing with Brock Purdy. And he just got a huge contract extension. And, you know, I think we would all agree, apples to apples, Jaden Daniels is a much better quarterback than Brock Purdy will ever be already.
Yes.
Right? Just
no question.
Pure athleticism and talent level. But Brock Purdy's gotten it done because they protect him, they gave him weapons, and they have usually a solid defense. And a great scheme.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels has all of those now, too. So, sky's the limit.
And more talent, and better looking. And
some of that talent has already come over here in Debo, right?
So
like, we're kind of picking their talent from them.
Yeah, I want to talk about Debo next, because I'm not as high. I'm curious to get your thoughts on what you're expecting out of Debo. We'll wrap things up next. You're listening to the Sports Junkies on 106.7 The Fan. Final couple minutes of the Sports Junkies. Toby Altizer in for the guys today. They'll be back at 6 a.m. tomorrow. In studio for the final hour with me is Bobby Blanco from Masson Sports. So real quick, before we get into celebrating the Hurricanes being awful in the conference finals.
Let's go.
Debo Samuel.
Yeah.
What do you expect from him this year?
I expect at the very least him to spread the field. You know, I mean, like, he's one of those guys where even like, was it last year, a couple years ago when he was hurt? San Francisco missed a handful of games, but you could tell he was 100%. They would still run him out there because you have to account for him wherever he is. At the very least, he's going to open the field up. He's another weapon that, like, you know, teams can't just focus on Terry anymore. when Debo's on the floor, on the field.
Definitely.
Right? So it's like you can't just shadow him or have a safety high above him and just hope Jaden finds somebody else. Like, Debo spreads it out so much, wears the defense thin. Then the upside is just, you know, looking at his stat page, between rushing and receiving, somewhere between like 8 and 12 touchdowns, you know, a total of 1,000 yards between the two, plus, like, I think that is, if you add that to what Terry did last year, assuming obviously he gets his extension, and then, you know, the other kind of weapons they've supplanted around them, like, that's a tough offense to stop.
Yeah, I think he's going to give them, I think he's going to give them a lot. I think people were getting on me the other day because I said he'd probably go for what he did last year, around 800 yards from scrimmage. And by the way, I'm totally fine with that. I think for a fifth-round pick, it's worth it. The $20 million that he's getting maybe is a little bit pricey for someone that goes for around 800. But regardless, a fifth-round pick for something that's going to be able to help you out, you know, he's going to go for, last season he went for 670 through the air and then on the ground went for 130. I would expect maybe a little bit more from maybe both sides. Maybe you get up to that 900 mark. He was injured or had pneumonia, I believe, last year. So maybe he's a little bit sick, out of shape, whatever it may have been. But I'm intrigued to see what he's going to be able to do this season, because I think what he gives you the opportunity to do is he's going to stretch the field horizontally while you're going to allow Terry and some of these other options to get vertical a little bit more. And I think maybe in turn, you draw some of those safeties down a little bit and you're able to maybe hit some more deep shots with the improved O-line, by the way,
right,
which will allow you to have a little bit more time. So I think, too, getting mobile offensive linemen like Connerly, like Tunsil, and being able in the screen game to get it out there to him, get some offensive linemen out in front of him, I think he could be a nice piece. I don't think, I think some people are going a little crazy on what they expect from him, but I think he's going to be nice for this offense.
I'm like salivating over the idea of, like, picture Jaden in the gun, Debo right next to him, Terry on the outside. You send Terry deep, run like a read option or like a play action, and then Debo is just kind of like running out to the flat. It's got a linebacker on him or, you know, a safety, and just does an option route, pick one way, and Jaden finds you in open space and you're gone. Like, that's the dream, right? Like, that's what you bring Debo Samuel in to do. And if that's not open, you can also take a shot downfield to Terry, or some, a middle crossing route from Zachary, whoever it may be.
What do you expect them to be this year? Like, what
overall
win total? What do you expect?
Oh my gosh. 12 wins is a lot, right? Like,
that's what I'm saying.
And the schedule's harder.
I think that they could win 10 games and be better than they were last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good point. That's a good way to phrase it. 10 games, but still better. Like, you know, because you're playing all of these primetime games, all of these standalone games. Harder schedule. You're going to Lambeau, week two is brutal. You know, you end the season. I think they're the only team in the NFL, I'd have to double check this, but that ends the season with four straight division games.
Twice against Philly
in three weeks
is crazy to think
about. It's crazy. And, like, I know the Giants are going to be, I'm predicting they're going to be a disaster this year, but they always give us fits. So, like, that's never an easy game either. And then you get the Cowboys in week 17. It's like, that's a brutal way to end. All that to say is, I still think, yes, 10 wins is like the floor, I guess. And maybe you're not going to get a Hail Mary. Probably not. You're not going to get, you know, some of these other, you know, play a Bengals with a terrible defense.
But I think you can look on both sides of that. Like, yeah, you might not get the Hail Mary, but you also probably don't miss the extra point against Dallas. Like, I think you can look on both sides. Maybe it benefited them more than, you know, it didn't. But at the same point, you've got the better quarterback than just about every other team in the league.
That's the thing. It's like, so, no matter what, you're going to be in it.
Exactly. Exactly. Real quick, before we get out of here, I want to hear from Rod Brind'Amour, because we're both Caps fans, and it was a disappointing to see how the Capitals season ended. But game one against the Panthers in the Eastern Conference Finals, they lost 5-2. Game two, they lost 5-0. Game three, they lost 6-2. After game three, Rod Brind'Amour threw like half his team under the bus.
Rod, you have a veteran group, and all season you've talked about the composure of the group, the ability. Well, how do you explain kind of what's even gone down in these three games, the collapses, the...
Well, I just said it, this bad decision making. I mean, and, you know, the four rookies in the lineup can't be some of your better players. Like, that can't happen. So there's a couple guys in there that, you know, I don't think came to play the way they needed to in this type of time of year. You know, it can't be Jordan Staal and Martinuk being our best players. Like, that can't always be that way. and they are every night. So we needed more out of some guys.
Real quick, there's one part that this clip doesn't do much justice, and it's Brind'Amour's eyes when he is making this statement. They are, like, you can see every bit. He is irate. Like, he's trying so hard not to, like, yell and scream in this presser, and it makes me so happy.
Yeah, do you take any solace in the fact that they're just getting demolished in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yes and no. Like, I love it so much. Like, I just... How Carolina became the new Pittsburgh for us is, like,
crazy.
But, like, I love that they're just getting mollywopped. Like,
yes.
Lose every game by 5 goals, please and thank you. But at the same time, it's like, well,
how do we not do this?
Right. And I was like, I know the Panthers are the defending Stanley Cup champs, but, like, what are they doing that's so different than what we're trying to do? And how come we couldn't do it?
Yeah, it's
or
like,
did Carolina spend all their energy trying to beat us, and then now they're just cooked?
Freddie Anderson did exactly that.
Yeah.
Dude, they've lost, what is it now, 15 straight Correct. In the Eastern Conference Finals? Games, not series, games. They have not won an Eastern Conference Final game in that long. And now we're going to jinx them, and they're going to make the Red Sox comeback.
They better not.
God, please no.
They better not. Real quick, as we wrap up, you're wearing all Maryland gear today.
Let's go Terps. Memorial Day tradition.
They going to win?
Cornell's really good. Only one loss in the year.
Lacrosse championship, right?
Yes, sir. Men's at 1 o'clock. I think it's ESPN. You can always count on the Terps being on the Final Four. They've only won 2 championships.
Can you count on them winning?
They've only won 2 championships since I was in school, I started in 2010, spring 11. So, but one of those years that was a perfect 18-0, the only 18-0 season ever, and one of the greatest lacrosse teams of all time. But, hey, man, like, it's a Memorial Day tradition. Maryland lacrosse, cookouts, beginning of summer. Crab cakes and lax. Let's see if they can pull it up. I think they can.
Well, Bobby, always great to catch up, man.
Yeah,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for stopping by.
Tobes, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
Always great. Toby Altizer in for the Junks today. They'll be back tomorrow. Up next here on The Fan, Doc Walker in for B. Mitch and Finley.